Good morning. Today's daf in Bechoros is Lamed He. We are on Lamed Almed Beis. We are just a little bit more than halfway down the Amud. And by Minei Rabbi Yirmia Me Rabbi Zera, a question that's going to be proposed. We are on the fifth parak of the Masechta, and we are talking about an examination of a Bechor in order to allow for its consumption. A Bechor cannot be eaten bizman nenu nowadays without a base of mikdash until it has a mum. And so therefore, the diagnosis of the mum is significant, very significant. And so you need a mumcha, which is what we discussed earlier in the perek. And the mumcha has to render an opinion. And over the course of this perek, so we talked about various discussions within the making of a blemish in a bechor. So we learned in the previous Mishnahs, we learned yesterday's daf, that you're not allowed to. And the Mishnahs yesterday taught us that even if there is a counter consideration, the animal's health is at stake, and the animal is going to die if we don't put a blemish on the animal. For example, the Gemara yesterday discussed where the animal was suffering from some sort of blood congestion, and if we pierce the animal and we allow for the blood to release, so that would really help the animal. But on the other hand, it's a bechor. You're not allowed to make a mum on the bechor. So what do you do? So there were upwards of four positions amongst the time exactly what to do under those circumstances. But in other words, the consideration was all predicated around the fact that you're not allowed to make a blemish on the animal. Not only are you not allowed to make a blemish on the animal, but as we learned in yesterday's daf, you're not even allowed to make a gram mum on the animal. You're not even allowed to cause a blemish to go on the animal. So if you put something that would entice another animal to bite off the ear of the Bechor, that's also going to be an Isser, that also you're not allowed to do. So this is what we discussed in yesterday's daf. What if you do make a blemish on an animal, on the Bechor, which you were not allowed to do? So Kanas, so a penalty. So the Chachamim obviously wanted to make sure that not only do people not violate the Torah, but if extra incentives are necessary, or I should say better, if extra preventative measures are necessary, so then it's necessary. And in other words, generally speaking, by Isuri Torah, meaning the Chachamim are required to put a fence around the Torah, a ged around the Torah, over here, they need to be strong. And the reason why, as we discussed in yesterday's daf, is because there's obviously a lot of pressure and a lot of incentive to put a blemish on the animal. The Bechor is just going to be sitting there on your property, you know, for years, for its entire life, if it doesn't get a blemish. So obviously there is a tremendous incentive. There's a tremendous push to want to put a blemish on the animal. And so the Chachamim realize that. So they have to counter with a measure of kenas, of a penalty. How severe a penalty? So that also was a machlokas tanaim that we saw yesterday in the Mishnah on Lamed Almed Aleph. Machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer was very severe regarding the penalty. You put a blemish on the animal, say goodbye to that animal. You cannot benefit from that animal forever. Even if another blemish were to happen naturally on the animal, you still can't benefit from it. The Chachamim were not as severe, but okay, that was the machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim regarding the kenas. With that stated, now that we have a little better context of what we're discussing, so let's pick it up where we left off yesterday. So let's say a person puts a blemish on his animal and then that person dies. So what happened now is that for that person, you had a kenas. Now, how severe kenas? So we just got done saying it's a machlokas tanaim. So is this question now going to be a question for Rabbi Eliezer? Or is this a question also going to be according to the Chachamim? So that part's not clear. It sounds like from Rashi that the Gemara's question over here is for Rabbi Eliezer. Sounds pretty clear from Rashi. Rashi umes. So Rashi frames the question that the question is asked within Rabbi Eliezer. That is an interesting Rashi because the halacha doesn't go like Rabbi Eliezer. The halacha goes like the Chachamim. So so it's interesting that Rashi frames the question in that manner. But in any event, though, the question basically is, do we pass a kenas over to the next generation? Right? And it's a great question. Meaning, what is a kenas? A kenas is a penalty because you violated the Torah. Okay, good. And who are we penalizing? So presumably what we're going to be penalizing is the perpetrator. Over here, the perpetrator now is dead, and now the estate passes on to the next generation. So you can make a wonderful argument that the penalty shouldn't be inherited by the child. In other words, the estate should be passed on to the child, sans the penalty. You could say that. The Gemara is asking exactly this question.
Isn't that like a debt?
Oh, in other words, basically it is, the larger question is, how to look at kenas in terms of a monetary obligation.
Right.
Meaning, is it first and foremost a penalty that just happens to manifest in terms of a monetary payment? Or no, does it actually become a financial obligation? Right? That's a lot of what's going behind the Gemara over here. By meaning, Rav Yirmiyahu Amar Rav Zera, Tzarim Ozim B'Bechor Meis Ma'al Liknos Meno Acharav. Im Tim Salam Ar Mocher Avdol Ovdi Kochav Meis Kansu Meno Acharav. So the Gemara says, well, let's basically do a little bit of comparison shopping regarding Knassos. Here's another Knass that we've discussed elsewhere throughout Shas, and that is the idea that you're not allowed to sell your Eved Kanani to a Goy. Okay, you have an Eved Kanani, it's chattel, it's property, and you can't sell them to a Goy. Now, and if you do so, so the Knass is that you whatever it would cost to free him from the Goy, you have to pay that. And then, on top of that, once you pay for that release, so then he goes free. All because you sold them to a Goy. Now, what's so bad about selling them to a Goy? So the Gemara is going to say it right here in our Gemara. And that is, you sold them to a Goy, and prior to that, under your ownership, so we could talk about the fact that you're going to take good care of him, but halachically, we could talk about the fact that he's now going to be a Shomer Shabbos while under your care. In other words, you put him in some sort of Jewish status, and he's Chayiv in Mitzvahs. Chayiv Mitzvahs that the woman's Chayiv in, Chayiv also in Bris Milah, and now that you sold him to a Goy, so now you've taken away his mitzvahs and his zechuyos. So as a result of that, so the kenas is you have to buy him back. And when you do buy him back, he goes free. Question on the table. Does this now kenas pass on to the next generation? So now is your, when the person who sold him died, and now the son inherits the estate, so does he also inherit this liability in terms of having now to buy back the Eved Kanani? Question, answer. The Gemara gives a very, very clear answer. So the Gemara says over there, I could certainly make the argument very strong that he has to, that the son is going to be given this liability of having to pay the knas. And the reason why is because you have a person who's suffering. In other words, the Eved Kanani now is under the ownership of somebody else because of the actions of the father. Chol yom v'yom. Right. I'm not exaggerating, no hyperbole. I'm using the language of the Gemara. B'chol yom v'yom, he's no longer eligible to do mitzvos because of the actions of the father. So now the son is straddled with this liability of having to pay this kenas. Fine, the Gemara says. Im tim salamer kivim malachto. I'm sorry, kivim malachto ben moed umeis. Let's take a look at another kenas, and that is, what if a person does malacha on chol moed? Now, under certain circumstances, you are allowed to do malachan chol hamoed. Under most circumstances, you're not allowed to do malachan chol hamoed. But you were kivei malachto. You actually intend on doing malacha on chol hamoed. And the Rashi over here points out you could have easily have done it before chol hamoed. You wait until after chol hamoed. And so what happens is if you plan on doing malacha and chol hamoed, malacha that you had no permit, no allowance to do on chol hamoed, so a kenas. And that is that you cannot benefit from that malacha that you did on chol hamoed. So is that going to be passed on to the child? So kiva malacha b'moed umeis lo kansu b'noacha rav mishum delo avdali sura. So there the argument can go in the other direction. Okay, that is a kenas because of the actions of the father. But that's strictly a kenas as a result of action. Meaning, yes, there's a consequence, but when all said and done, the kenas is primarily on the inappropriate action of the father, so therefore the father is only levied with the kenas and not with the son. Okay, so basically now we have a range of, does kenas pass on to the next generation? So by selling an Eved Kanani to an Eved Kochavim, yes, it is. By doing malach on chol hamoed, no, the kenas is not going to pass on to the next generation. Good. So we do have a range. So over here, where do we fit in? Dad put a mum on the animal, dad died. And now for dad, you were not allowed to benefit from that bechor forever. Now is the son going to inherit this kenas? Achamai. Lidi de kansu rabbanan v'haleisa odilma l'mamane kansu rabbanan v'haisa. And so the Gemara over here frames it in a classic methodology of, is the kenas on the person or is the kenas on the item? And so, obviously, with the nafkamina being right here, if the kenas levied it was against the person's no longer here, therefore the kenas is no longer here as well. If the kenas is on the money's here, the estate's still here. Amalei tenisui, so he says, okay, I can marshal a proof based on another kenas, and that is the following. Let's say you do a little bit of field work during the Shemitah year. Now, the word niskavtsa basically means that you're taking out some of the weeds of the field. This is light field work. Now, light field work, Rashi's language is kind of exactly that. Rashi says, this is lo avod b'shvitz avoda chashuva. It's not significant work. You shouldn't have done it during the Shemitah year, but still, it's light work, and therefore, no penalty for doing this niskavtsa. You're just removing the thorns from the field. Okay. So if all that was done during the Shemitah year is that thorn removal, that's fine. So after the next, the immediately after the Shemitah year, you could plant in this field. No knas. However, ni taiva, ni daira, lo sizar lamotzei shvius. However, if you fertilize the field during the Shemitah year, that's significant work. Now, nitaiva and nidaira are two different types of fertilization. Nitaiva, Rashi says, nizdav la'ideh galosu masur shel zevel. You basically just you threw manure right into the field. Nitaiva, Rashi, I'm sorry, nidaira, ayideh dir behemos. This is another way of fertilization, right, very creative. Basically, what you do is you take animals, you pen them up into an enclosed area, and you let the animals do what nature asks them to do. And that is another way of fertilizing your entire field. Anyway, either way, you're fertilizing your field. It's obviously really significant. And so you worked the field during the Shemitah year in a significant manner. And obviously you should not have done that. You wanted to get a head start. You wanted to get a jump start so that you can immediately plant after the Shemitah year is over. So there's a kenas. So the Amar Rav Yosi Barabi Chanin Akhtinan Heitiva Umeitz Benozara. And over here, if the father was the one who fertilized the field and the father died, so the kenas, this kenas is not going to be passed on to the next generation. So you see over here that the kenas is more on the person than on the item. And as a result of that, so the kenas is not going to be passed on to the next generation. And the Gemara seemingly is now saying the same thing over here. When the father put a mum on the bechor, So the kenas is on the father, not on the son. And so if the father dies, the kenas is not passed on to the son.
Where does the money come?
What? Where does the money? Which penalty?
Kenas.
No, but I'm saying
in the bechor.
There's the money doesn't go anywhere. The kenas is that you can't eat the animal.
There's no money.
Right, correct. You're banned forever from eating the animal, according to Rabbi Eliezer.
And the Shemitah, the money goes.
And the Shemitah, the ban is that you can't plant the field. Right. You cannot benefit from the work that you did during the Shemitah year.
So it's not a monetary. No. It's not that you have to pay.
Right. Okay. With the Avikanani, by the way, that is monetary.
Right.
So in other words, and so there you have to buy back the Avikanani.
Right.
And obviously you're paying the Ovik Kochavim, you're paying the non-Jew. Okay. Amar Rabbi Naktinan, we are now in the very top of Lamed Hamad Aleph, Timei Taharos Ameis. So, let's say you do the following. I come over and I damage your property, but I don't do it in the physical sense, but I do it in the halachic sense. I come over to your property and you have food that's Tahor, and I make it Tamei. Right, in a destructive manner. I mean, truth of the matter is, when it comes to Nezik, even if it's not in a destructive manner. But if I do damages, so I have to pay for the damages. But over here, it's not physical damage, it's halachic damage. This is in halacha what is called Hezek Sheino Nikar. Hezek Sheino Nikar. Are you obligated to pay for Hezek Sheino Nikar? It is a big discussion in the fifth parak of Gittin. Our discussion over here is going to assume the following. May Iker Adin, according to the strict letter of the law, you're not obligated to pay for Hezek Sheino Nikar. It's not physical damage, it's only halachic damage. Now, I say only. You're suffering, meaning you're obviously going to have financial loss, but because of the halacha, not because it's physical damage. And so, therefore, may ikar adin don't have to pay. But obviously, the chachamim don't want people to get away with this kind of behavior. So, the chachamim levied a kenas against the person who does hezek she'eino nikar. So, the person who does hezek she'eino nikar has to pay, but not because of nezek, which is a financial obligation. Simple, plain and simple. And obviously that financial obligation is going to be passed on to the next generation. It's just going to be a liability that the next generation is going to have to pay if the father didn't pay. That part's clear. But what about Hezek Sheino Nikar, where it's not a financial obligation, it's a kenas? Okay, wonderful. So now we're setting up the same question again. So now is the son going to be obligated to pay this kenas to the victim? So, Timitaros Ameis Lo Kansu Beno Acharav. So the kenas does not pass on to the next generation, says the Gemara. My taima, hezek sheino nikar lo shmei hezek kenasa de rabbanon, lididei kansa rabbanon, librei lo kansa rabbanon. So So the Gemara says, exactly, because it's not a financial obligation. It falls under the category of kenas. And so the kenas is on the person, not on the property. And so therefore, as long as the person's there, he has to pay. But if the person's not there, and it's just the property, the kenas does not move to the property and it's not going to be passed on to the next generation. When the Mishnah Lamed Hamad Aleph, Maisa Bezachar Shevachalim Zakenu Sa'aro Medudal. So there was a ram, and it was a bechor, and it was old. And we know it was old because basically its hair was flowing. So we have now a Kohen who is straddled with a ram, and his luck, the ram has now lived for a very long time with no blemishes. And again, it's onerous. It becomes now a real obligation for the Kohen where there's nothing he can do with it other than just simply wait and feed it. And Veru Kazdur Echad. And there was a non-Jewish officer who sees this. V'amar Mativa Shozeh. And so in conversation they say, you know, what is so unusual? What's going on over there? Why is he just keeping around that ram? And keep in mind, by the way, you're not allowed to work it. You're not allowed to shear it. Right? So it's basically, it's just sitting there on his property with hair flowing all the way down. And it's like, what's going on over there? It looks strange. So Amr Lo, so they say to him. Now it's really critical over here in terms of who the conversation is being had between. It's as the Gemara is going to make the point also pretty clear. In other words, it's not the owner of the ram that's talking right now. It's other people. So in other words, other people are informing the officer. Oh, you want to know what the story is? It's very simple. That animal is a bechor. That owner is a kohen. He cannot benefit from the animal until it has a physical blemish. So the officer said, well, okay, no problem. So the natal pigum v'tzarah mazno. So along comes the officer, and the officer clips the ear with a, Rashi describes it as a spear. Fine, so he clips the ear. Uva maisa lefnei chachamim v'tzira. Now they went over to the chachamim and said, okay, is this a kind of mum where we can now shech the animal? The chachamim said, go for it, it's good. Now here's the critical part, and the Gemara is going to make this point clear. I'm going to make it clear right now. The owner, the Kohen, did not ask him to do so. Right. If the owner would have asked him to do so, this would be called Amir La'akum. Now, I know we're used to hearing Amir La'akum in terms of Shabbos, but it's not limited to Shabbos, and it's going to be very clear in today's daf. Amir La'akum is that when I ask a guy to do something that I myself am not allowed to do, that falls under the category of Amir La'akum. And so, therefore, over here, the Kazdor arrived at this conclusion all on his own. He had conversations with other people. And other people were informing him. And he took matters into his own hand, and he clipped the ear. So the Chachamim said it's fine. Now, but even if it was Grama, Grama we know is Zasser. Right. This is better than Grama. Grama is Zasser.
If Grama you cannot eat it, so here surely you can.
Right. Okay. So the Chachamim itiru. V'acher shehitiru halach v'tzirim ba'aznei b'choros acherim v'asru. So now the Kazdor said, oh, okay, great. So I'm doing everyone a favor, right? In other words, it's fantastic. And so what the Kazdor now is doing is he's going around from field to field. He's looking for Bechorus and he's clipping the ears. And the Chachamim said at that point in time, no, you now know too much. And so therefore you're doing it for the intent of the owner. And from this point going forward, it's going to be Asr. So the first time it was Mutter because he was not doing it for the person. But after that point of going forward now, there is an understanding that he's doing it with the intent of the owner, with the rutzon of the owner. Well, yeah, the first time they did permit it, right?
But after that, they're saying that they didn't stop him from doing it.
Well, right. In other words, correct. Yeah. Right. What should have been done from that point going forward is that you should explain to him that, okay, for this time it's allowed because he didn't ask you. But from this point going forward, you have to understand that, right, you can't do it on their behalf. So pam achas haytinokas mesachim besad v'kasharu znavei talaim zebezeh v'nifstiko znavo shel echad mehem v'arehu bechor. So kids were playing in the field, and so young boys in the field. So what do? To entertain themselves? So they torture animals. Okay, that's what young boys do. And so what they were doing is they were tying the tails of these animals one to another, and then hit the animal and have the animals run away from each other. And okay, they were torturing the animals. Obviously not condoning it. But that's what kids do. And what happened was, in this particular incident, is that one of the tails tore off the animal, and it happened to have been that animal was a bechor. And they went to the chachamim, and they said, is that considered a mum? And the chachamim said, yeah, that's a mum. It was a totally unintended consequence, and it was done by a child. So, Raushi Tirach v'kashar zinavos b'chor sacherim v'asru. So then the kids got it. The kids are like, oh, this is a good thing, right? We thought we were doing something destructive, and meanwhile we're doing something constructive. So let's continue in this practice. So they found other b'chor animals, and they tied the tails, and they went about in this manner. And from that point going forward, asr. Asr from that point going forward, because now you're doing it l'ratzon, you're doing it knowing that the owner wants it, and you're basically acting as agent of the owner. And so you can't do it from this point going forward. Zeh klal kol shehu ladato, asr shelo ladato mutar. And the Mishnah, just in case we didn't fully understand the entire point of the Mishnah, is that if you're doing it ladato with the intent, with the interest of the owner, so basically it's turning it now into an agency, it's like a shlichus, and therefore you can't do it. But if it's shelo ladato, if you're not doing it as agency, but rather you're doing it totally on your own, and it just happens to be that you are acting strictly out of your own interest, and not of the interest of the owner, so then it would be fine. Pamacheres haya tzricha. So the Gemara now wants to know, these are two cases which are essentially making the same point, and are both points necessary in the Mishnah. The Gemara's answer is yes, they are. Because when we're talking about a guy, the guy, in other words, are we going to be teaching him bad behavior based on this? So the Gemara says, no, we're not teaching him bad behavior. Now, there's a really interesting Rashi over here. I'm going to read the Rashi inside. Rashi says that we're not teaching him bad behavior if we allow it. So Rashi writes, the tir b'chor rishon ayadom mishum delek alamemer asi hay ovi kochem lemisrach la milatom mum bekachim. We're not going to teach him bad behavior. Why? Listen to this Rashi. It's a fascinating Rashi. Desirchus de ovi kochavim lo ichbat lan. As far the sirche de ovi kochem lo ichbat lan. As far as the guy going astray, it's not our issue. Shahare nauhu beisura, because he involves himself in isra all the time. So over here, we're worried about giving him, teaching him bad habits. He's involved in this all the time. Now, the simplest way to read Rashi, if I may suggest, is that when the Rashi says the word Isser over here, meaning something that's Isser for us, not for him, meaning Mato B'chor B'mum. It's not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. It has nothing to do with the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. This has to do with B'chor and putting a blemish on the B'chor. This is strictly Jewish halacha. This is Torah. And it's not at all connected to him. So when Rashi says, Sharei no gubi suri, he's involved in Isra all the time, right? It means simply that he's involved into what us is usr, but to him is totally fine. So, okay, I'm not telling you that that's the only way to read Rashi, but it's a suggested way of reading Rashi anyway. So when it comes to the guy, so if we say it's okay, so what's the big deal? It's not a big deal. Avakadas lemisrachim alo. But let's say the child, in the second case, the Jewish child, was involved in putting a blemish on the Bechor. And for the first time we said it's okay, because it really is okay the first time. Because he had no intention whatsoever the first time. He was just playing the first time. From that point going forward, if we say it okay even the first time, we're basically going to teach him the worst habits. And so you can make an argument, you can make a really strong argument, that you shouldn't even allow for the first time for the Jewish child, because you're basically teaching him about Isurim and that Isurim are okay. Even though that obviously wasn't the intended lesson. Good. So v'iyash mina kat mishum delawasi lechlufa begadava v'kocham dasi lechlufa begadayim alav. And on the other side, you can argue as follows. If we only had the case of the child, I'll say the following. It's a child. In other words, yes, there is a chinuch mitzvah, but look, no one's going to confuse a child and the behavior of an adult. Meaning everyone could just simply understand that was the behavior of a child. That was childish behavior, literally childish behavior, and it's not going to replicate to adult behavior. Masha'en Cain, if I see the guy and he puts a blemish on the animal and we martyred it for the first time, so other people are going to say, oh, you know what I saw? I saw a guy put a blemish on the animal, the chacham, and we're fine with it. It must be that it's fine. So over here, there is more incentive for the chacham to make exera. So tzricha, that's why both of these cases are necessary, because I could have made arguments why we shouldn't have been matur the first time, not in the case of the ovi kochavim and not in the case of the child. Amrav chista, amrav ketin lo shenu elad amrle elim ken haya bomom. Ava im amrle im naso bomom, kemand amrle zil avid be mumma. Dami. What exactly was the conversation that took place between the kazdor and the others that were around him? So the Mishnah over here wrote the language very clearly and very specifically. And that is what was said to him was, you know, it's not allowed until there is a mum. As opposed to, you know, it's not allowed until someone puts a mum on it. And so what Rav Chista is doing is making a really big deal about that language. It can only be okay if what was told to the Kazdar was, you know, you can't use it until there is a mum on it. But there was no action directive. There was no instruction to put a mum on it. However, if the word that was used was not haya, but rather na'aseh, it's ki'ilu, it's kim'at, you're telling the guy to put it on it. Now, you're really not. Meaning, even if I substituted, if I took out the word haya and I put in the word na'aseh, let's read the sentence like that. Basically, here's what we're saying to the Kazdor. You know, it's not going to be permitted until someone places a blemish on it. We're still not asking him to do so. But according to Rav Chista, by virtue of the fact that you said the word na'aseh, it's like you instruct him to do so. Amar Rava Michti, Rava says, I don't agree. So, mimelohu mali haya mali nasa. Nobody's asking him to put a blemish on. The other people are just simply explaining. That is a bechor, and you can't get benefit from it until, and according to Rava, it doesn't matter whether you say, until there is a blemish on it, or until you place a blemish on it. We still, no one's asking him to do so. It's just an explanation of what's going on. Ela nasa nami mimelohu veloshna. So as far as Rav is concerned, the language doesn't matter. As long as you're not asking him to do so, so the first time it's going to be mutter because we didn't ask him to put it on. He did it strictly on his own volition. Now, if he does it ladas, it's going to be aser. Now, at the end of the Mishnah, the summary sentence, 99% of the time throughout Shas, made up number, made up stat. Mm-hmm. So 99% of the time, after when you see a Mishnah with the word Zakhlal, the Gemara is going to ask, what is that coming to include? And so over here, this is a standard Gemara. What are we coming to include? Gerama. Where let's say the Kazdor didn't actively put a blemish on the animal, but like the maneuver we saw yesterday, put a sweet cake right on the ear of the animal, have another animal come and bite that, which we learned yesterday was Aser. And even if the Kazdor did it, that too is going to be Aser. If he did it for you. Now, what's coming to include? It's coming to include Mesiach Lefi Tumah. What is the case of Mesiach Lefi Tumah? So we all know. Mesiach Lefi Tumah just simply means I'm speaking, but just very innocently. Not understanding that what people are listening in on the conversation and are going to arrive at halachic conclusions. It's just a conversation. Mesiach Lefi Tumah, Rashi over here writes, Shalom, Shalom, Kazdor, Mativo. In other words, there wasn't even a question on the part of the Kazdor. The Kazdor didn't even ask. But Elohim Atzma Mesichan Lefi Tumah. But what happens over here is he's overhearing a conversation. And the conversation was, look, you know, it's so interesting. You see next door? It's got that weird animal with that long hair, and you know what's going on? And they explain to one another. It's a bechor. It needs a blemish. He can't shecht it until it gets a blemish. So good. So the Kazdor didn't even ask the question. It wasn't their intention that somebody overhear their conversation. They were just simply conversing, and the Kazdor overheard it, and that's Mesiach Lefi Tumah, and that would be fine. And then, of course, we move on in the story where the Kazdor puts a blemish on the animal, etc. Okay. We're now basically serving the parameters of what is considered a natural blemish. And is a reflex reaction going to be considered a natural blemish? And the Gemara's answer is, it's a natural blemish. Let's say, for example, you're being chased by an animal, right? A bechor, right? The ram got a little bit excited, right? A little frisky. And he starts chasing you. And you don't like being chased. And you want him to stop. So you kick him. And you kick him good enough where you put a blemish in the animal and kicking him. Is that a natural blemish? The Mishnah says, yes, it is. So you kick him and you make a blemish, or is there shocht in the love? You shecht over this. I'm a Rapapa lo shanu ella sheba'ato b'shas redifa, v'la'ach redifa lo. So Rapapa makes the following limitation of the halacha. You have to kick him in self-defense. But let's say at a later point in time you kick him. That's not considered self-defense. That's not considered natural blemish. Pshita ma'u detei matzaru demitker kamash malan. So the Gemara gives us a havamina. What would be the havamina? The havamina would be, you know what? That's also reflexive. In other words, it's classic conditioning at its best. Meaning, this animal chased you, it gave you a good scare, and now the next time you pass the animal, even though the animal right now is not currently aggressing against you, but you know what? Right. You remembered how much fear you had in running from the animal, and so basically, you see the animal next time, and like, you know what? He'll give it a good kick.
Okay.
He'll remember that kick. Okay, good. No, that's exactly the point of the Mishnah. It wasn't your intention. Your intention was just simply self-defense. Okay. Ika Naami, now, in the second version of our discussion, the Havamina that we just laid out is, in fact, more than a Havamina. The Gemara actually accepts it as a valid argument. The Gemara now takes the Havamina and actually puts it into a halachic parameter, which is that even if I'm cooking at a later point in time, that's just simply part of the reflex reaction of, I can't believe you chased me, you dumb animal, and then you gave it a kick. And according to the second version, that's considered a natural blemish. What do you mean? You kicked a bachur. He's not out of self-defense. No. That's part of the, right, sari hu damidkar. You remember the pain that you endured and that you suffered as a result of this animal chasing you. It's still considered a reflexive action, and therefore it is considered a natural blemish. Okay. Is there a way of stopping the kedushas bechor from coming? So there are two ways. One we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, and one we're learning right now, all the way on Daf Lamed Hay. And that is that before the, well, in utero, before the animal comes out, you put a blemish on the animal. Mm-hmm. So Rav Yehuda says that that would stop the kedushas bechor from coming. And, well, I have to say it better, and I have to say it even clearer. It doesn't stop the kedushas bechor from coming, but it is now considered a bechor ba'mum. Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry, that's the better way to say it. It now becomes a bechor ba'mum, and that would, not only is it okay, mutter, meaning it's totally a legitimate practice in which one could do, in order to put a blemish on the animal so that the animal does not just have to sit there and wait for the rest of its life until it gets a blemish. Tosfos, going all the way back to the beginning of the Masechta, Daf Gimel Amud Beis. So Tosfos says that now we basically have, without a Beis HaMikdash, two strategies in which we could prevent the Kedushas Bechor. Well, again, I got to be clear about the way I'm presenting it. One way totally prevents the Kedushas Bechor, and the other way is it gives an allowance to put a blemish on the animal, lechatchila. So one way is to have a non-Jewish partner, like we learned in the beginning of the Masechta. A second way is what we're learning right now, which is that you don't need a non-Jewish partner. Just simply put a blemish on the animal as the animal is emerging, before the animal emerges, and then you're good to go. Meaning now it's a bechor ba'mum, and the kohen is going to be able to eat it. So which way is preferable in terms of a maneuver? And which is what what do we do? So Tosus all the way back on Gimel Amud Beis actually addresses this very question. So Tosfos all the way back on Gimel Amud Beis talks about the idea that it is not good to have a non-Jewish partner in the animal, but Tosfos tries to make some sort of distinction, whether his partnership is in the mother versus in the child. Maybe that's the difference. Ava Anu, I'm just reading sections of Tosfos back on Gimel Amud Beis. Ava Anu dolo bikim bekach mutav lahaknos ove kochavim kodin she'avali de takala. Tosfos points out, this maneuver that we're learning right now in Bechoros Lamed Hei, about putting a blemish in the animal before it comes out, it's a technical maneuver. In other words, you really have to know what you're doing. You have to know about blemishes, you have to know about a delivery of the child, of the offspring. There's a lot going on over there. So Tosfos says, look, we don't have enough proficiency. So de'i lav mishum de'efshar k'rav Yehuda hayalan l'takel l'aknos of de'kochavim v'anan de'lo bikin havi k'lo efshar. But because we just don't have the expertise to do what the Gemara is endorsing right now, so Tosfos says that's why we go about it in terms of having a non-Jewish partner who is having a share in the animal, and that's going to remove the animal from the Kedushas Bechor.
But there's no issue of if it's a female Baal Tashri, you're causing a blemish on a female?
You're just putting a blemish on it.
You don't know the gender. You're going in blind and you're causing...
I see what you're saying. Okay. Right. I don't know.
There's no kanas in doing this?
It's totally permissible. Totally permissible. Wow. Okay.
Is that inflicting pain?
I'm sure it is. I'm sure.
So you're not allowed to inflict pain.
Okay, that's what Ben is asking. Okay, but again,
I
understand that. But again, you can't just look at things in a vacuum. You have to think of all the considerations. If it comes out as a bechor, which without the Beis HaMikdash, it can live the whole life without being sheared and without working, and just, in other words, and it literally will be a burden on the owner. So you have to take the whole picture into account. Amar Rava, the Gemara is going to address your very question. Amar Rava Gadja, Beune Imre Besifsa Say. So, you ever deliver a goat? And the answer, of course, is no. I've never delivered a goat. But in other words, but the ears of the goat are very long, and so therefore, because the ears come out before the head, before the forehead, so by the goat, what you can do is clip the ears. Now, Imre, now when it comes to the sheep and the emerging kid, so Besifsa Say, so you just simply split the lip. Because the lip is going to come out before the ears. The ears are tucked back. You get the army now in another version. So when it comes to the kid that comes out, you can even clip the ear. I'm sorry, the kid of the sheep. You can even clip the ears because it comes out by its temple. And so therefore there is a way in which you can clip the ears before the head comes out. Again, if we were all involved in the delivery of goats and sheep, I'm sure this Gemara would speak to us a lot better. Amarava aval. I'm sorry. Okay, we are now discussing blemishes, and truth of the matter is that we're going to be discussing this a lot more in the next perek. So just as a quick preview, in order for it to be a blemish, it has to be on the external portion of the animal. An internal portion of the animal is not a blemish. It may be a trefa, but it's not a blemish. It's not a mum. A mum has to be on the external portions of the animal, which is why we almost always talk about the clipping of the ear. The ear obviously is an external portion of the animal. What about, let's say, its mouth, and specifically the teeth and the gums in the mouth? Now, the truth of the matter is Rashi over here is describing it more like the gums as opposed to the teeth, but I think it would just be easier if I translated teeth. It might not be a perfect translation, but everyone will understand and get the point. Okay, so basically when talking about the teeth of a sheep or a goat, so if you've ever seen the dental structures of the sheep, okay, and that I have every Rosh Hashanah. So so what you know is that they have incisors. They have, truth of the matter is they only have it on the bottom. They don't have it on the top. And then there's a long break of just gums, and then going back to the back of their mouth. So they have molars where they're going to be chewing the grass. So now in halacha, we can make a very easy distinction, which is that the incisors that are in the front of the mouth, that's external. I understand it's behind the lips, but still, you can see them, and we can call that external. The molars, you can make an argument that it's not external. What the Gemara is going to do now is that Gemara is going to make an argument it is considered external. And that's what we're seeing now inside. Rava achavala mechze, payu mechze have moma. When the animal is eating, you never see the molars. You just see the incisors. But on the other hand, when the animal is making a guttural sound, so you get to see the molars all the way in the back. And because it is shown on occasion, that's enough to warrant it to be considered an external part of the animal. And therefore, if the molars are missing, that's considered a mum. It's considered a physical blemish. My kamash lantanina. The Gemara says, okay, Rava, thank you very much for sharing that information with us. It's a Mishnah. Hachut and hachitzona shenifkamu v'shenigmemu hapanimio shenekru. So the Mishnah later on, when we're going to be discussing this in much greater length, actually describes where either the incisors or the molars are going to be missing. And that is considered a blemish. So what is Rava now adding to our discussion? We already know the Mishnayos. So my time alav mishum dechipai mechze, am Rav Papa, Rava Nami, time at the Masis and Mefarish. My time in Akru have a mum mishum dechipai mechze. So the Gemara says Rava's not telling us something that we didn't know from the Mishnah. Rava is just simply explaining the Mishnah. The Mishnah is there to tell us that that the teeth are missing and it's a blemish. Rav is explaining not only the incisors but the molars as well. Again, that's straight out of the Mishnah. But the reason why is because sometimes we get to see the molar. When the animal is letting out a guttural sound, so the mouth is opened up wide enough where you get to see the molars. And because of those occasions, it's considered an external part of the animal. Adkan. We're up to the next Mishnah and our last discussion in today's daf, and that's the following. Who is Ne'eman? Who has the credibility to testify over a blemish? Now, we're not talking about the actual looking at the blemish. We'll get a mumcha, like we've discussed already before. The issue is as follows. Was this blemish a natural occurrence, or did someone put a blemish on the animal? And so we need somebody with credibility to tell us that. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of credibility, who's got credibility? Everyone's got credibility. However, we also know, the mumcha is there to determine whether it's a mum kavua or a mum over. That's diagnosis. Over here, we're talking about, did this mum occur naturally or did someone illegally, illicitly put the blemish on the animal? So we just need somebody to tell us how the blemish got there. So in terms of ne'emanus, so almost everyone has ne'emanus, but you have to take the following into consideration. If I have a financial gain, so then I'm not credible because the financial gain is going to cloud my judgment. It always does. That's what financial gain does. That's why the Torah says, lo sikach shochad. The judge is not allowed to take a bribery because he can't take a bribery and then be objective. It just doesn't work. So, with that stated, so kol ha'mumim ru'uyim lavo bidei adam, ro'i yisrael ne'amanim. Ro'im kohanim eino ne'amanim. So in the Mishnah, a distinction between ro'i yisrael, ro'i kohanim. Now, I'm going to, at this point in time, purposely not translate the words. And you'll see why in just a moment. But a distinction is made between ro'i yisrael and ro'i kohanim. Ro'i yisrael are believed, they're credible. Ro'i kohanim are not believed, they're not credible. Shimon Gamliel Omer Naaman Hu Al Shel Chaver Ve Naaman Al Shel Atzmo. And Shimon Gamliel says that you're believed over other people's animals, but not your own. Rabbi Meir Omer Chashel Al Dever Lo Dana Velo Meida. Once you are suspected, so not only can you not judge on your own, you can't judge, period, on any. Okay. Here's what we know for sure. There's a Mishnah that talks about the credibility of people and specific to whether an animal is a blemished animal and that blemished animal has come about naturally, or whether or not it has come because someone actively put it on. With the difference, of course, being that if somebody actively put it on, that's not a blemish in which we can shecht. Rather, it has to come naturally, and I need somebody to testify that that's what happened. Now, in the Mishnah, we also know that there are three opinions in terms of who has the credibility. The Tanakam, the Chachamim of our Mishnah, make a distinction between Ro Yisrael and Roi Kohanim. Ro Yisrael are believed, Roi Kohanim are not believed, and I didn't explain those terms yet. You'll see why in just a second. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that you can judge on others, but not on your own. And Rav Meir says that once your credibility is impugned, you can't judge not on yours, and not on others as well. Okay. That's the Mishnah. That's the summary of the Mishnah. We haven't really explained the Mishnah. We're going to do so right now. Rav Yochanan, Rav Elazar, Chad Amar. So Rav Yochanan, Rav Elazar are having a debate over the following. We say Roe Yisrael. Now there are two ways to translate the words Roe Yisrael, as there is two ways to translate the words Roe Kohanim. The Yisrael over here is talking either about the shepherd, or it's talking about the owner. In other words, the employer versus the employee. When we say Roe Yisrael, one way we could translate it is that the shepherd is a Yisrael. Another way we could translate it is Roe Yisrael, the owner is a Yisrael. And the shepherd is of a Yisrael, even if the shepherd happens to be a Kohen. Now, which way is the better translation? So both of them can actually work. The Gemara is going to try and debate in terms of which one's the better translation. Chanamar Roe Yisrael Be Kohanim. So the first way we're going to translate Roe Yisrael is that the owner is a Kohen, and the shepherd is a Yisrael. So, ne'emanim. So they're going to be believed, meaning that even though the owner of the animal is a Kohen, who is going to be obviously benefiting from this testimony, but the testimony is being provided by a Yisrael, who happens to be a shepherd, and he's believed. Now, l'legima lo chayshinan. Now, what should be our concern? So the concern should be legima. Now, legima literally means a little bit of food. Right? A little snack. And that over here, understood in the context of our Gemara, a kickback. Meaning, look, what's going to happen? I've been shepherding his animals. And one of them is a Bechor. He'd be so happy to hear from me that the animal got blemished in a natural manner. And I'm not only that, but I'm going to report the news to him. You don't think that when he sits down and eats his Bechor, you don't think he's going to invite me for dinner that night? In other words, it'll be a fantastic feast. And I bet you that I'm going to be able to sit down at the table and enjoy a little bit of that meal. And as we learned earlier in the Masechta, a Bechor is allowed to invite a Yisrael over to the meal to enjoy the Bechor together with him. Sorry, The Kohen, right, thank you, thank you. The Bechor is that's which is being eaten. The Kohen, Bechor is not doing any invitation. The Kohen is inviting the others, the Yisraelim, to eat the Bechor with him. So over here, the Gemara is saying that we're not concerned about a kickback. Roi Kohanim be Yisrael ein nemanim meimar amar. Now let's switch it around. Let's say the owner of the animals are Yisrael. Let's say the shepherd happens to be a Kohen. I know it's a little bit unusual, a Kohen being a shepherd, but the Kohen's a shepherd. So came into Katachena Bay Lo Shavikli Didiv Lachrine. So now here's the thought process of our Kohen shepherd. The Kohen shepherd is thinking to himself, you know, imagine I go back to my owner and I report the news to him that this Bechor, that he basically can't do anything with other than let it graze, it's got a blemish. How do you think I'm going to get rewarded? Well, he knows I'm a Kohen. He's probably going to give me the animal. So now that is not just a seat at the table. That is the receiving of an entire Bechor animal for the news that he's going to provide. That's serious. In other words, and so according to the Tanakhama, we don't trust that because we're worried that it's more than just a kickback. You're going to be getting the entire Bechor for this testimony.
I'm concerned about the fact that the owner could be Yiligima from the Kohen shepherd.
Wait one second. V'hu adin kohen l'kohen d'chayshin l'gomlem. And not only that, but the truth of the matter is that here in this case, if the shepherd is a kohen, it doesn't matter whether the owner is a Jew or whether the owner is a kohen. The Gemara says it really doesn't matter because let's say the owner was a kohen. So the owner is a kohen. So okay. So if I tell him, think about it. If I tell him that this animal got a blemish and the blemish occurred naturally. So the Kohen owner will say, okay, great, so I'll take it, meaning I'm a Kohen too, so I'll take it. But the Gemara says, but still over here, I would be concerned. Why? Because now from the shepherd's standpoint, you owe me. And we're worried about reciprocity, gomlin. Gomlin is reciprocity, meaning if I scratch your back, you're going to scratch mine. So if I allowed one of your animals, wink, wink, so then in the future, I'm sure you'd be more than happy to do the same thing for me. Okay, so that is approach number one in the Tanakhama. Roi Yisrael and Roi Kohen is talking about the shepherd. Now, and for again, just to set it up, for the Roi Yisrael, no concern, even though he may get a little bit of a kickback, a seat at the table when the owner is eating the Bechor, it's not enough to distort his judgment. If, however, we're talking about Roi Kohen, who is looking to maybe get an entire Bechor animal, that judgment's impaired. Now the Asr and Shimon Gamliel Lameimer Neman Hu Al Shal Chaver Veino Neman Al Shal Atzmo. And now along comes Rosh Shimon Gamliel makes the following distinction: is that a Kohen can testify about other people's animals, but not over something which is his own. The Asr Rameir Lameimer Achashal Adavlo Danavlo Meido. And Rameir says that once a Kohen cannot testify about his own animal, he can't testify about other animals as well. In other words, that lack of credibility for his own is also going to be a lack of credibility for others as well. Okay. That is one approach in terms of how to understand the Mishnah.
According to our mayor, a Kohen could never be a witness.
You are foreshadowing tomorrow's daf. We're going to get there. The Gemara is going to arrive at that very awkward conclusion.
As I said, we're
getting there. V'chan amar roi yisrael v'hein kohanim ne'amanim. Now, the other way to understand the Mishnah is that when we're talking about roi yisrael, it means to say that is the employer is a Yisrael. You're working for a Yisrael. And that means to say, Roi Yisrael, v'hein kohanim ne'emanim. And even though you're a Kohen, you're going to be believed. Why? Me'emar amar lo shavik sur me'emar rabbanim v'yad li didi. Because the Kohen here is a shepherd. And like I quipped a little bit earlier, shepherd being a Kohen, that's unusual. Yeah, it's unusual. And so therefore, when the shepherd comes with the news and says that, you know, your animal is blemished, the shepherd's not thinking to himself, and he's going to give it to me, meaning I'm a shepherd. I'm just a shepherd. Now, mind you, by the way, some of the greatest people in Jewish history were shepherds. So this is not a knock on shepherds in general. But he says, he'll say to himself, I'm just a shepherd. He's going to find a Talmid Chacham, a Kohen Talmid Chacham, and give it to him. So basically over here in the second approach, the reason why the Kohen's judgment the Kohen's credibility is not going to be impaired is because the Kohen shepherd never really thinks that he's going to be the beneficiary and the recipient of the animal. So, Roi Kohanim v'hein Yisrael, Einam ne'amanim. However, if on the other hand, If you're a roe kohanim, which means that you're working for a kohen, so you're not going to be believed. Dechashin legimai. Ah, so here, a kickback is going to impair your judgment. Meaning, the owner's a kohen, you're Yisrael, you came back and you've reported. I got the best news for you. Your bechor got a blemish and it happened on its own. Oh, great. Tonight we feast. And you're invited. So because of that, so according to this second opinion, that's enough to impair your judgment. Let me put the comment correctly. And if a kohen is working for another kohen, so there we have multiple considerations. One is that small kickback that we just described, the seat at the table for dinner tonight. And two, if it's kohen to kohen, so then there's an issue of reciprocity. Right? Remember what I did for you months ago? I allowed one of your bechor animals. Okay, you think you can help another kohen out? The also Reb Shimon LeMeimar. Now, in that vein of now this second approach of how to understand the Mishnah. So now let's go to the next two opinions of the Mishnah. Now, according to Reb Shimon, he comes along and says Naman Ashal Chaver Veinu Naman Ashal Atzmo, that the kohen is believed on others but not on his own animal. The also Reb Meir LeMeimar Chashal Adav Lo Dan Velo Meido. And Reb Meir comes along and says, no, that once you're a Kohen and you can't testify for others, I'm sorry, you can't testify for yourself, you can't testify for others as well. Okay, so what we have now in the Mishnah, according to the Tanakhama, is two different ways to understand. The word Roi Yisrael, does that mean that you are, and I'm going to go in the order that we just saw in the Gemara, does that mean Roi Yisrael is that you are a Yisrael shepherd? It's talking about the employee shepherd who is a Yisrael working for a Kohen. Or no, Roi Yisrael means that you're a Kohen shepherd who's working for Yisrael. Okay, so is the Yisrael going on the employee or on the employer? Good. And obviously in the two different ways that we are suggesting Pshat in the Mishnah, basically what's also at odds over here is whether or not the receiving of a small kickback is enough to impair your judgment. According to the first way we're approaching the Mishnah, it's not enough to impair your judgment. And according to the second approach, it is enough to impair your judgment. The Gemara, let's just do a little bit more for this morning. Bishlama lamandam ro Yisrael v'hein kohanim ne'emanim. So if you're going to go with the approach of Roi Yisrael, and it happens to be that the shepherds themselves are kohanim, so ha'nedas remeir lamemar ha'chashol ha'davar lo danav lo me'ido. So I understand now Remeir's retort. Because Rameir is basically saying, no, because you can't testify on your own animal, you can't testify about other animals as well. Others' animals as well. Elamanda Meroi Kohanim Be Yisrael. But if we're saying now that Roi Kohanim is a reference to Be Yisrael, meaning that you're a Kohen shepherding for a Jew, Ain Ne'emanim, and in that approach we're saying that he's not believed, meaning the Chachamim's viewpoint is that a Kohen is not going to be believed when he's the shepherd. So then the Chachamim and Rav Meir are espousing the exact same viewpoint. My Asa Rav Meir Lashmina and Hainu Tanakama. Now it comes out that the Chachamim and Rav Meir are essentially saying the same thing. But that can't be because in the Mishnah they're presented as two separate opinions. So Ika Benayu de Rabbi Yoshua ben Kepusai. So the Gemara says, well, there's going to be just a subtle difference between the two of them. Detanya Rav Yeshua ben Kapusai Omer b'chor bei kohen tzarech shnayim min hachshuk lahayid alav. And the Gemara now is going to bring us into a brisa that is going to present a machlokas about who can testify. And there are three opinions over here. I'm going to pause at this point in time. There are three opinions over here in the brisa. And the Gemara is basically going to say that the subtle difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Meir is whether or not they subscribe to this position of Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai. So we'll start right here from this point. Tomorrow morning, let's quickly recap. Three topics that were covered over the course of this morning. One, the conclusion of yesterday's discussion about whether Kenas passes over to the next generation. Is the Kenas on the person or is the Kenas on the property? That's a very succinct way of asking the Gemara's question. And essentially, the answer is the Kenas is more on the person than on the property, with notable exceptions, like selling an Ovi Kochavim, selling your Ebe Kanani to an Ovi Kochavim. What if our first big topic for that was the conclusion of yesterday's daf. Our first big topic of today was, what if somebody, a non-Jew, comes over and puts a blemish on your animal, but not because you asked him to do so, or he did it strictly on his own volition, the first time it's okay. After that point, it's not okay anymore. Same thing with children, and the Gemara's ensuing discussion of Leratzon versus Shelo Leratzon. What if you kick an animal reflexively because it's chasing you? Is that considered a natural blemish? The answer to that is yes. What if you kick it subsequently after it finished chasing you? Machlokas. The last topic that we discussed today was the shepherd now reporting that the blemish occurred on its own. And if the shepherd is a Yisrael versus a shepherd being a Kohen. Although even in that, the Mishnah is not super clear about whether we're talking about Kohen Yisrael being the employer or being the employee. Two different approaches in the Gemara on that topic. But basically, let's just simply say, to succinctly wrap it up, what would be enough of an incentive, enough of a financial reward that would impair your judgment? So in one approach, we're saying that a small kickback is not going to impair your judgment. But if you're looking at possibly getting the entire Bechor animal, that is obviously going to impair your judgment, and you're no longer given a credibility. And according to the second approach, no. Even a small kickback, which is a seat at tonight's dinner, which a small kickback for reporting that the mom came naturally, that's something to be concerned about.